I think at every stage in his life, Jacob was insecure and he was wanting something. Right? First, he wanted his brother's inheritance. He wanted that. Then he worked for Rachel, ended up with Leah, and then worked again for 7 years for Rachel. So he was insecure, and you can see that in his character. Better part of his life, always struggling, always insecure. What does God say about Jacob? If you read Malachi and if you read the book of Romans, same thing is said in both those chapters. God says, Jacob, I have loved. Esau, I have hated. Such was God's love for Jacob. And yet, through the better part of his life, he was spending in insecurity. Not sure if God is blessing me. Why is God not blessing me? Jacob's life was a search for blessing. When the truth is, God says, Jacob, I have loved. Esau, I have hated. I'd like to draw four principles from the book of Esther. Esther as a book was written about 2,500 years ago, approximately, extremely relevant to your work and mine. So I'd like to draw four principles. I'd like to read a passage from the book of Esther, chapter 4. I'm going to read from verse 8 onwards. If you have your Bibles, you can turn to it. Esther, chapter 4, verse 8. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa. As a background, Haman, who all of us know the book of Esther, the story of Esther, Haman gets the king to issue a decree saying that all Jews must be killed. Mordecai gets to know about this and he is outside the palace. And Esther, who has since become queen, she sends one of the eunuchs, one of her servants to meet Mordecai and saying, why are you so sad? What is happening? And this is Mordecai telling Esther's servant. To show to Esther and to explain it to her, he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Mordecai tells Esther, unless you intervene, every single Jew is going to be killed. Verse 9, Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she, Esther, instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the golden scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. Mordecai goes to Esther and Mordecai says, all Jews are going to be killed. Will you do something? You are now queen. You are in a high place. You are living in the palace. Would you please do something? And Esther says, if I go to the king, he will kill me. If I go to the king without him calling me, he will kill me. You see her insecurity in this passage. Esther says, the king hasn't called me for 30 days. Her insecurity almost prevented Esther from fulfilling God's purposes in her life. Can you see Esther's problem? Her life, her challenges, her struggles in the palace are so big before her eyes that she is unable to see the disastrous fate of all the Jews. And this is a response. The king hasn't called me in 30 days. If I go to the king, I will be killed. And what's at stake? The lives of all the Jews. I dare say that we are like that. every one of us without exception. Right? What is at stake is the eternal fate of a whole bunch of people we are relating to every day in our workplace. And what are we focusing on? My problems at work. I have this trouble at work. I have this challenge at work. I'm not getting promotion. I'm not getting this. That's what we're all, my thesis is, we're all basically self-centered people. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. We see Esther as a woman of faith, a daring woman, great accomplishment, yes. But the book of Esther also shows her insecurity, which is also our insecurity. Verse 14, for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. And then wisdom dawns on Esther. And she sent this reply to Mordecai. Go gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And then she says, and if I perish, I perish. If I perish, I perish. And my hope and my prayer, as you leave God at work, my hope and my prayer, would it be that God will enable every one of us to walk out of this room with that posture? If I perish, I perish. I'm not going to allow my insecurities to come in the way of what God is calling me to. We know the story of Esther, so I'm not going to labor on that, but I want to draw a few principles. Esther is living in the palace. So are you and me. We are living in the palace too. Now, palace is a relative word, right? We might not be in a royal palace, but look at the city of Bombay. Last week, one day, I finished work more than usually late, around 10 o'clock by the time I left office. I work with the Economic Times, walked out of the Times of India building, which is VT, the heart of Bombay. I took 2 steps to a right. My car is parked a few distance away. It's a 10-minute walk to where I park my car. I started walking. And 2 minutes after I left my building, as I was walking on the road, in the heart, this is the arterial road of Bombay, right opposite VT station, outside the Times of India building, I see 3 commercial sex workers standing there and soliciting business. Walk past them, I burst into tears. I never had to face a sex worker face to face. And I was walking, she was standing beside me soliciting business. I am in the palace, she is not. I pass that, I walk through the subway, cross the road, and I see 5 street children on the road playing. You can see they are deprived, malnourished, totally deprived. Right? I am in the palace, you are in the palace, they are not in the palace. I walk a few more steps and I see a boy, 15, 16, his body has totally wasted away. He is so thin, his shirt is just hanging so loosely, and he is sitting on the road, main part of busy commercial part. He is all hunched up and he is doing drugs. Totally wasting away. You and I are in the palace. He is not in the palace. How many times have you and I felt that our problems are so big? Jia was saying, we ask, why did you allow this? Oh God, why have you allowed this to happen? Right? The first I want to say, you and I are privileged. We are blessed by God. You and I are no different from Esther. Both of us are in the palace. And in the palace, I don't know about you, but I experience the fear of perishing. Let me say that in your work and in mine, the fear of failure haunts every one of us. How many of you feel anxious, get worked up about the fear of failure? Right? It's a daily battle for me. I don't want to fail, and I'm sure you don't want to fail. And the fear of failure is a big negative motivation that drives us today in our work. I want to talk about the fear of perishing and the purpose of the palace. I want to draw four principles from the book of Esther. The first thing, I want to talk about the path to the palace. Esther's path to the palace and your path and my path to the palace. The path to the palace. The second thing I want to talk about is the peril of the palace. The peril of the palace. The third thing, the purpose of the palace. And the fourth thing, the principle of the palace. The path to the palace, the peril of the palace, the danger of the palace, the purpose of the palace, and the principle to live in the palace. First, the path to the palace. You know, as professionals, we feel a sense of accomplishment. And it's good to enjoy our success at work. We want to be successful. We want to be excellent in what we do. And it is good to enjoy our accomplishment and our success at work. But it is also wise to be warned that success reduces our dependence on God. The more successful I become in my work or in my ministry, the higher the chances are that I'm going to start depending less and less on God. That's what Raji was sharing. At one point in time, he prayed, God, let my life be one long crisis so that I will never drift away from you. The second mistake we make is that we assume as professionals that we are there. We have been there. We have arrived. We have been successful because of our hard work. This sense of accomplishment you feel, I feel, is rightfully due to us. That is wrong. I'm not saying that Warren Buffett is saying that. I want to read a portion from a letter that Warren Buffett wrote a few years ago. This is what Warren Buffett says. My wealth came from a combination of living in America, some lucky genes, and compound interest. Both my children and I won what I call the ovarian lottery. For starters, the odds against my 1930 birth taking place in the US were at least 30 to 1. My being male and white also removed huge obstacles that a majority of Americans then face. Warren Buffett says that the single biggest reason that he succeeded was that he was born as a white male in America in the 1930s and not as a black in Africa. He says just that is the single biggest contributing factor to his success. He says, my path to the palace was determined by an ovarian lottery. I don't think he believes in God, but we do. If you and I are where we are in the organizations, in the position, drawing the salary we are, question is, how did you get there? How did I get there? How did Esther get there? You look at the life of Esther, a series of really strange. The entire book of Esther, the word God is not mentioned. Not one mention or reference to God in the book of Esther. But yet, God is controlled. The king went to Greece. This is not in the Bible, but it's a historical account. King went to Greece and he lost the war with the Greeks. And he came back defeated, but he wanted to save face. And therefore, he threw this huge party. And at the end of the party, the climax of the party was a 7-day drinking festival. Everyone could have as much wine as they wanted. And the uniqueness was everyone had a golden wine goblet and no two wine goblets were similar to each other. Everything was unique. That was the party. What are the odds that he would lose the war with Greece? What are the odds he would choose to throw the party? And then at the party, everybody got drunk. 7 trays of wine and they got drunk. And the king decides he has to show off Vashti, the queen, to everyone. What are the odds that he would do that? In those days, wives had no choice. They just had to do what the husband said. Especially if you're a queen and a king said something, you just had to do. But no, Vashti was different. Vashti, many people say, was the first feminist of our time. She said, I will not obey the king. What are the odds? She will not obey the king. And she gets thrown out. And there is a hunt. 1,000 virgins. Again, not mentioned in the Bible. Historical account. Some people, historians say, 1,000 virgins were rounded up. And the king had to pick one to be the queen. What are the odds that he would pick Esther? Can Esther say, I came to the palace because I was beautiful? Or should Esther realize that God's plan was to place me in the palace? What about you and I? Many years ago, someone preached when I was in Chennai. He said something which I'll never forget for the rest of my life. He says, who am I except what God has made me to be? What can I do except what God has enabled me to do? Where can I be except God has placed me to be? Is that your posture as you enjoy, as I enjoy my success at work? What do you really believe about your path to the palace? Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10, I'm reading from the New Living Translation. Whatever I am now, it is all because God poured out his special favor on me, and not without results. For I have worked harder than any of the other apostles, yet it was not I, but God who was working through me by this grace. We live in a performance-driven culture. We are only as good as our last performance. The gospel is the opposite. The gospel says you're not justified on your good performance, but you're justified on the basis of Christ's perfect performance. Being good is not good enough for God. You need to be perfect. None of us are perfect except Christ. None of us are perfect except Christ. What is your path? What do you really believe? Is it your hard work? Is it your studies? Is it your intellectual capability?